The chairman of the committee is indisposed on another bill and another committee at the moment, so...
Heather's making me sick, too.
So we will begin, and we're going to start from the back of the agenda today, and I am going to open the work session on Senate Bill 268A. And I would ask the senior squires to come forward with whoever else you've brought. And I don't have a sign-up sheet, but we'll ask the witnesses to introduce themselves.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Walker.
I'm so cold, I can almost see my breath.
Would you...
Can we turn the heat up in here?
I called the soldier.
Thank you.
I would be happy to loan you my jacket, if you would care.
And I want a blanket while you're at it.
I have a blanket in my office I'll bring down, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina Squires. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Appreciate the opportunity to bring Senate Bill 268 before you today. With all due respect to the committee chair, this is actually a bill at the request of the Department of Administrative Services. It kind of feels like it's a DAS FDIO bill, and kind of has been progressing that way through the Senate. And so, out of respect to Mr. Hartman, with me today is Dan Hartman, the State Risk Manager, and Barb Jensen, the, I believe, Y2K Coordinator for the State of Oregon. I might be close on that title. So I'll ask Dan to start, since it really is.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hartman, for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dan Hartman. I'm the state's Chief Risk Officer. I'm the Administrator of the Risk Management Division with DAS. Our job is to insure state government for property, workers' comp, and especially tort liability, which is the subject of this bill. Two big things we do is work with state agency managers to help them prevent losses, such as lawsuits and claims. And the second big thing is financing the cost of those losses, figuring out how to pay for when we have to pay because of lawsuits in which we are found negligent. This bill here is our year 2000 computer error protection measure for public entities in the state. The premise of this bill is to be an affirmative defense. The idea is that if we public entities, we public agencies, meet the standard of care, the elements that are listed in this bill, then we have met what is considered a good faith effort. And by doing so, then we feel we should be immune for tort liability claims and suits. Other states have passed bills. Five prior to 1999 passed bills in which, and there's another 30 states that have bills now before their legislators. The matter of fact, the state that was a leader was Nevada in 1997, and their state senator, William O'Donnell, said, if you're trying to solve a problem but fail, there's no intent to harm, so there should be no liability. He also said their proposed law protects taxpayers from paying for the millennium bug twice, first by allocating funds to fix the problem and then paying damage awards. Our bill is different than Nevada's. Nevada's was a very broad immunity bill in which they did not even have to prove they met some good faith effort. That is not the case with this bill here at all. We are trying to tell you that we wish to meet a standard of care, and if so, then we believe we have the ability to say no, to rely on our defense. If we don't meet that defense, or that standard rather, then we cannot use this law. Subsection 2 in Section 2 lists those six elements that constitute good faith. Matter of fact, the initial version of this bill had five. We have now six, and one of the major amendment to the Dash 1 was to beef up those elements to prove not only that we had planned, but also can prove that we took action to meet these standards. I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon chapter of the Public Risk Managers Association. It's called PRIMA. I'm their president this year, and we represent over 100 local governments and the state in this state. We support passage of this bill. That's all I have for testimony. Glad to answer any questions, and also Barb Jensen is here from the Y2K office that could talk about this bill or talk about what the state is doing.
Great, thank you. Do you have any prepared comments, Mr. Jensen, or are you just here to answer questions?
I am here to answer questions.
Okay, good. Questions? Representative Lowe, and then we'll go.
Thank you.
My son calls me a technophobe. I barely know how to turn on the computer, but I'm getting better. I'm getting better. I'm going to learn email soon, but I do have people skilled and competent who can help me with those kinds of things. So forgive me for asking this very basic question, but can you articulate fully the scope of the anticipated problem?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Jensen. I'm with the Year 2000 Project Office. I've been directing that office for about 2.5 years. What's interesting about Y2K is it seems to keep changing. As we looked at it as a technology problem in the beginning, a system problem, if you will, it has grown to be a much broader problem. And while we've been able to rethink, fix the systems, because that was probably the easy part of this project, we have found other elements to the project surface rather rapidly. I would say this year we'll see the social side of Y2K come through loud and clear. And I think that we're getting prepared for communicating better about Y2K and assuring the state and the citizens that we have business taken care of as far as government is concerned. But the depth of Y2K, a very broad piece that we're all kind of dealing with, is, you know, infiltrated in the schools, infiltrated in the way we do business, into our small business, into every walk of the industry. People are talking about Y2K. And some understand that while it's a technology problem, others are trying to get a grip on what it means to them, because even if you don't have a system problem, you can be affected by Y2K. Does that answer your question? No. Okay.
I want to know what kind of things you're anticipating will happen. Why do you need this immunity?
Oh, excuse me. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think this immunity legislation, which we do support in the Information Resource Management Division, will be very, very good for the entities of government that have, in fact, prepared for Y2K. They've made every reasonable step to get ready, to do all the things that they can do within their control to prepare for Y2K. One of the elements of Y2K is your data exchange partner. You can't always be sure that the other person's going to be ready. And in fact, the industry was talking about compliance over 2.5 years ago and how we would all be compliant. We all strive to be compliant, but compliance basically stated that, or inferred, that we would all be operating 100%. Well, that isn't necessarily true if the data partner isn't going to either cooperate or you can't get in touch with the data partner. So we have spent a lot of time in state government connecting with our data partners to ensure a couple of things. Do we have a change in system? Are we going to talk differently in our computer language? And what do we need to do about that? Now, some of the more cooperative partners that we have, that seems to be a very streamlined, easy process. But it can be disruptive to the system if, in fact, you do make changes and if, in fact, the data partners are not talking and cooperating together.
Hello, question. Thank you kindly. I don't know what a data partner is, but what I'm looking for is some examples of what problems you anticipate we're going to have. Remember, I don't speak tech, so if you can give me some examples of why this piece of legislation is important and what problems we are insulating you against. What breakdowns are you anticipating? Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Lowe, I am definitely not a techie. I can't even understand part of the language that's written in here because I barely can get on the World Wide Web. Part of the concern from some of the local governments, this bill would apply to the state, cities, counties, and special districts, community colleges, schools, all local governments. I'll give you an example of a basic concern. From our 911 communications district, they rely on electricity to function. If something happens to go wrong with PGE and their screens go blank and people call 911 and the system just doesn't respond because there's no power to it, that could potentially be a problem for us.
Data partners?
Representative Lowe, I'm not sure.
Deanna, quick study.
Okay.
Yes, that could be a data exchange partner. Okay. The state of Oregon and our agencies are connecting with the utilities.
Can you tell me some more? Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, other examples, some of our fire trucks have embedded chips, apparently, that make the sirens work, and there's some concern over potentially some of those embedded chips not being Y2K compliant. The fire truck then leaves the station, goes sprawling out onto McLaughlin Boulevard and thinks it has its lights and its sirens working, and although I don't know how you couldn't tell that your siren wasn't working. I plug my ears when they go by. But those types of issues are also issues for fire departments. For the everyday average water or sewer district, payroll, running payroll, potentially the software that they run for the payroll is not Y2K compliant, therefore billings, the billing structure may be disintegrating right before its eyes, or they may have to reprint and send out bills, or some sort of issue could be taking place with the software computer terminal and the program that they're also using to generate those bills. So those are some examples some of our districts have brought to us.
Representative Wells.
Thank you. I guess what amazes me in this litigious society that we have that, and I understand we're using the term good faith effort here, but how people think that they could litigate an issue like this because you haven't found everything that's going to happen out there. And now we need to have this kind of legislation to protect ourselves from people who would, as I would say, are preying on defaults in our society when they do come up. Last session we heard, when I first heard about Y2K problems, I think Representative Ron Adams kind of carried the water on this issue and kept warning us that we weren't doing enough. We were going to go out and find people and train them so they would know how to do WANG, the computers and that we had at the state, and we were going to train these people at free of charge or whatever. They'd work at the state for a certain amount of time and then be free to go on. And then I heard stories during the interim that we were really not up to speed. We were running way behind at the state level on getting ready for Y2K. Where are we in looking back at last session when we started looking at this? Have we met the goals as a state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, we are on a daily basis monitoring the top systems of the state. All of the information about our readiness that we provide on the website is out for public disclosure, and we are called on it on a daily basis. Those systems are about 80%, we say about 80% right now ready. They are on scheduled milestones that are yet to be achieved. The first milestone mark is July 1. I suspect we're going to be 95% there. By September 1, most of our systems will be done. We have one system that is rated in the red category, however, out of our 78 statewide mission critical systems, and that's a telecommunications system. And that system is being watched all of the time, 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and its readiness is being hit by a team, a very intense team, to ensure that we get our switches changed and that telecommunications system is functioning on or about the 1st of October. It is the one that is delayed. We believe we have spent a great deal of resources, and we believe we are ready. I would say we're in the middle of the pack when it comes to states. There are some states that are claiming 99% readiness and have been for over a year. However, states have different criteria for claiming their readiness. This is something we've never done before. It is new ground, and everybody has made up their criteria along the way. We believe we are very conservative in our estimates. We don't want to give any false information. We also believe we will have system failures. We don't want to let people believe and make guarantees that nothing will happen. We are building business continuation plans to assure that we're ready and that we're protected from any failures that would happen.
Thank you. I guess one more quick question.
Yes.
Why would there be any reason for anyone to oppose this bill? I see you had one negative vote in the Senate. Do you know why there would be a reason? Is this because we need the people who work in the area of litigation that are opposing this?
I might try answering that, sir, Mr. Chair, Representative Wells. My guess is that could be true, that there are those that wish to have all avenues open to them. They could also feel that no matter what we do is not good enough and that we should do more. But how far is enough? I've been told we're spending, in this state government alone, over $100 million to fix the problem. What I worry about is no matter what we're doing, I still know we're going to have claims and suits. And they may be due to our systems, they may not be. They may be due to other systems that we connect to, because they're all connected. This bill is intended to try to reduce some of that litigation, some of that needless expense. That's all.
Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask a question which probably isn't fair to this panel, but and maybe it's more to staff. We have another bill before us, House Bill 3245, and I guess we're going to make similar policy decisions here, but the tax seems a little different, or definitions are different. And I guess the bill before us talks about a year 2000 failure, and the House Bill 3245 talks about a computer date failure. Again, I don't know the nuanced difference there. I don't know if that was a drafting difference. I guess I'm trying to get a sense of definitionally, because I believe the two bills are attempting to do similarly the same thing. Why the difference? Is that, and I don't know if you can answer that question.
I'll try, sir. Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I looked at both of them, and I've seen other bills, both at the national level and with other states. And they tend to be similar. There just seems to be different verbiage. I'm also not a technical person, and certainly not only with computers, but also with this English language of ours. I think some of our advisors, our legal advisors and others, verbs mean different things. And you'll notice in our bill, 268, it seems to be a little longer, that definition. And I think that was an attempt to try to get all the verbs that could be used in an allegation of negligence in a lawsuit.
Well,
but I think they're trying to get to the same place, sir.
Representative Edwards.
I could follow on to that, and then I had another question. If I had a choice, I like the language in 3245 because it talks about a computer. Year 2000 failure doesn't talk at all about a computer. And I assume that's always been definitionally what's behind the failure. It's just an observation and, I guess, a personal preference.
I agree, sir. Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, there's another definition after that. It's called system. And there we try to identify the kinds of equipment in which the error would happen, software, hardware,
right,
and all the variations of what we call computers. On the back side, on line 14, and 15.
Right. I guess the question is, and this is the legal side of this, is if you're in court, what would you rather have? And I'm not a lawyer who can then make that judgment, but my sense would be you would want as clear a definition as possible, of which I think 3245 gives it, but I'm just raising an issue that at least for our consideration, because you have two bills kind of doing the same thing with two different approaches of definition. Don't know if there's a logic to one being better than the other. That's what I'm raising.
To me, sir, it don't mean too much of a difference. If you wanted to reinsert different pieces, that would be all right.
Can I have one last thing?
Yes.
It goes back to your, so I understand, too, this issue of, in your bill on page, the first page, line, starting on line 10, you talk about what's an affirmative defense. Again, isn't it verb tense? Aren't we talking about after a date? So after the year 2000, I'm assuming, although we've heard testimony you could see in as early as this year, in September, potential problems.
Yes.
But in some ways, you're talking about events that you, actions that you would have taken. So shouldn't all those have been past tense, i.e. identified, prepared, prioritized, and had done all those things? Because I've always presumed these cases will come basically after the date hits. Again, I'm not trying to nitpick this. I'm just trying to get a sense of, if the policy decision is to give you this defense, it would be, seems to me, it would fall after the event.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I agree. I did rely on Legislative General Counsel in helping write this bill. We did make some nominal wordsmith changes, like you see in E, letter E and F, they tend to show work that's been already done, like E is has approved.
Right.
Again, I think it...
You know, my only point is I think all of these activities are things you're saying, we did these things, and again, I presume that the cases will come after, so hence these are things you had done versus that are you currently arguing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, Barbara Jensen with the Statewide Year 2000 Office. There are already Y2K events happening. We have what we call danger dates or trigger dates.
Right.
That, in fact, more danger dates occur after the year 2000 than before. So we anticipate problems, not just on the rollover, but continuously. There's something like 20 dates after January 1, where systems will hiccup, where systems may not connect. So we've got, several this year that are going to happen and a whole lot next year that are going to happen. So we've already started to see problems in systems.
We know of two danger dates, and one was already June 30th kickover on the fiscal year, and September 9th is going to be another one. Can you please tell us what the danger dates are and what kind of, you know, how far out they go? I know that one other danger date, I noticed there's no sunset on this thing, and I think 2032... that year is going to be a real big problem.
Right.
So please tell us a little about that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I don't have those right in front of me, and it's something that I haven't necessarily studied a great deal. Our technical folks look at those dates, talk to our systems managers, and when they do the technical reporting, they're talking about those. I'd be happy to prepare a list of those danger dates and bring them back to you with some technical advice on what that means.
Could we have that? I would really appreciate seeing that within the next few days.
You'll get it. I'll work with the committee council.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. For the panel's edification, Representative Edwards and I were just talking about the definition of danger dates and decided it was any young man who wanted to date our daughters was how we would define that. I'm not sure it has the same meaning. Did you have another question, Representative
One
Edwards?
Were you finished?
I wondered about the sunset.
Yeah, that was my question. It seems like you should have an end point, I would think. If you're taking reasonable steps, I mean, whether it's now or past the date, it seems, if I recall too, the other bill actually had a cutoff time, so that you can only make this defense for so long, not for perpetuity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, our program doesn't really sunset at the year 2000. We'll continue to monitor state agency activity and things that are going on. I suspect our program would not monitor till the end, or not end until the biennium, which is June of 2001, because there will still be post Y2K activities to manage.
And for the members of the committee, thank you. For the members of the committee, I think if you'll, I think we'll talk about this today when we talk about House Bill 3245, but if you look at 3245, there are some limitations in that date, but they more comport to the current tort law limitations about how long you can bring an action after discovery of a date, and then also a ultimate repose provision, I think, in 3245. Other questions for the panel? Representative Backlund? Grandma Walker? I'm sorry, Representative Walker? Just with that shawl on your lap, you kind of...
Well, I'm at least warm now, Mr.
Good.
Chair. Thank you. No, I had a concern about the sunset clause or lack thereof, and I'm glad someone else brought that forward.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Members of the committee, Representative Lowe, one other example I thought about that has been shared is what they call the Mother's Day syndrome with the phone system. What happens when people start to worry about their Y2K needs? They'll all pick up the phone just to see if it works. And we call it the Mother's Day syndrome because often you can't reach your mother to reach out and touch her on Mother's Day. And we're looking at that being an example of how people might react to Y2K when there's really no problem.
That's why I asked the question.
Thank you. Just one more quick question for the panel. Anytime I get the opportunity to talk to people who are in the Y2K business, I always want to know what you're planning on doing on New Year's Eve this coming year and where you're going to be.
I'm at home, sir.
You're at home?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be in the office. I start that day at 6 o'clock. I leave at 2. I'm back at 6. I'll be there till 3. We had an emergency planning exercise today with the Office of Emergency Management and top executives of state government where we are planning the communication scenario. So, and all my staff will not be approved of any leave until the last minute.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, in the spirit of Representative Lowe and my non-policy Y2K wonkness, I'll be in Tahiti probably with my husband.
Look, if you got to be stranded somewhere.
Yeah, let it be Tahiti. Maybe.
Good deal.
Actually, Mr. Chair, my daughter's a pilot and she advises do not fly on that day or any there soon time thereafter.
Any other questions for the panel? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tahiti, huh? I think we should go on this
honeymoon. Do we have anybody else here who would like to come forward and offer any testimony with respect to Senate Bill 268?
I do have a question, though, that I want to ask generally. Maybe somebody in the room can answer it. If we're to be considering a small statute of limitations or 8-year statute of limitations, and it dawns on me that my son said that some of this problem will resurface clear on out to the year 2032. It's going to often some of the computer fixes and the software fixes that have been happening simply postpone the problem. It would be useful before we act on any of these bills to know the rest of the danger dates before we act on, especially on the statute of limitations.
Representative Edwards?
Well, I'd also like to get some clarification about what's the better approach on definitions. And we can work on that.
Okay.
Well.
Good. Please come forward and just for the record, state your name again so when they're listening to this tape someday, they'll know who was talking to us.
Barbara Jensen, your 2000 Project Office with the Department of Administrative Services. I thought that I might offer to go find a computer in this building and print you the danger dates, bring it back to you in a matter of minutes.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Jensen. I appreciate that, and we'll get it distributed to the members of the committee. Committee, I sense that this is an issue that we're going to want to take a little bit more time to talk about and get some more information about. So unless there's anyone else in the room who wishes to come forward right now on Senate Bill 268, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 268. And why don't we go ahead and keeping with our discussion focused on Y2K, we'll work from reverse way of the agenda, and I will open the work session on House Bill 3245 and ask Mr. Craven from the American Electronics Association to come forward.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Craven, representing the Oregon Council of the American Electronics Association. We had a public hearing on this bill last Friday. And as you may recall, I was here with Stephanie Burns from the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. In that hearing, various members of the committee with very astute eyes found little bits and pieces here that they wish some clarification on. There are, I believe the committee has the Dash 1 amendments distributed. These were, I worked with council committee staff at the direction of Representative Shetterly to pick up the pieces that, to find a few clarifications for the items that were raised at the hearing on Friday, and that's what the Dash 1 amendments do. The major issue in the Dash 1 amendments on page 2 of the printed bill, section 2, beginning on line 10, there was a discussion about the ultimate repose date. The original drafted bill had a 5-year date. At the suggestion of the chair, that was changed. That you'll see that change in the Dash 1s to 8 years, which I guess unlike previous witnesses, I am a techie, but I'm not a lawyer. So I would say that this conforms to a date, I guess, that's used in other, I think, product liability statutes. And while we might argue that this isn't a product liability bill per se, the 8-year date does conform with some other uses of that, and that was the suggestion of the chair. The only other changes from the printed bill on line 21, a member of the committee raised the issue about was first sold to a consumer in the state. And the word consumer is not otherwise defined in the bill. So what you see in the Dash 1 amendments is that's just changed to was first purchased for use or consumption in this state. And that's a more common phraseology. So that's what that does. On line 3, page 8, line 3, excuse me, page 3, line 18 of the printed bill, line 18 and 19, I believe somebody raised the issue about in an action for fraud, misrepresentation, libel, or other similar action. The question was raised is where the phrase libel came from and how that would come up in a cause of action. And while our counsel, Stephanie Burns, thought about it over the weekend and theoretically constructed a possible scenario where libel might be raised, I think she agreed with the committee that should probably be removed from the bill. And instead, she suggested inserting the phrase breach of warranty as a type of thing that indeed may come up much more possibly than a libel suit. So the amendments insert the phrase breach of warranty and delete the phrase libel. And finally, two more issues. Page 3, line 35, I believe somebody on the committee asked, this is the affirmative defense for compliance testing. For some reason, the bill said it is an affirmative defense to civil liability in tort for harm caused. And the issue was raised, why just that limitation? So the Dash 1 amendments delete the phrase in tort and make it a more general statement. And then finally, on the last page of the bill, lines 12, the bill, I guess, was incorrectly drafted in using the phrase exemplary damages, and I think the proper term, I've been told by my lawyer friends, that punitive damages is the correct term in Oregon, so the word punitive has been substituted for the word exemplary. So those are the amendments that resulted from last Friday's hearing, and we support them and thank the chair for moving them through the process.
Okay. Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Jim. Got a problem in that I am using my law practice several computers, but one of which was purchased in 1987. And
it still works.
Well, for what I use it for, it does. But I see that it has already outlived the statute of limitations contemplated in the bill we have not yet passed. So what do you think?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, taking some direction from the hearing the other day, we did move that date from 5 to 8. I think the national debate that will go on over this is you have two things here, again, as my legal counsel tells me, and please help me, anybody on the committee, if I go and take a wrong turn here. But part of the issue is, when you bought that computer, what kind of warranty did you have? Typically, you probably had a one-year or two-year warranty.
The only thing I remember about the warranty was a promise to take me kicking and screaming from the ancient age into the modern world.
Right, and it was a modern computer, I trust, in 1987. The issue that's going to arise in this Y2K issue is it overlays with basic law about contracts and warranties, is that does a purchaser have a cause of action because of Y2K issues that would trump the otherwise expired warranty on the underlying product? I mean, that product was probably warrantied to work for 12 months, 24 months, whatever, by the original purchase. All things being equal, you should have replaced that computer by now. We like you to buy a new one about every 18 months. That's our basic product cycle. But certainly, 1987 to the year 2000, does a consumer, because of an intervening issue of discovery about a Y2K-related problem, have the cause of action to have that computer fixed when it has basically well outlived its expressed or implied warranty? So I think that's, and I'm struggling here on the legal terms of art, but that's part of the issue is we call that in the industry a legacy product. Now, the fact that it still works is wonderful. We would have loved you to have bought three more in that intervening period, but I think a lot of us have an old computer at home that maybe still works, or we run some games on it, or the kids use it as an enhanced typewriter. So part of this issue is going to be, because of Y2K, do you have the expectation that we should essentially replace that computer or swap out the whole BIOS, the basic input-output operating system? This will come up with software, too. Software companies are not interested in redirecting a huge part of their workforce towards rewriting, say, Windows 3.1 when they're trying to sell you Windows 2000. Though, so we're trying to strike a balance for what's a reasonable period of time for which the vendor has an obligation to at least help fix that, patch it if possible, give you a free update, give you some kind of software that will make it continue to work, even though your warranty on that product is way out of date.
Follow-up question. Sure. Well, Jim, I just want to assure you that the motherboard's been replaced and it's been bumped up, suits up from time to time, periodically. But I raise the question because I do know that there are embedded chips here and there that are extremely serviceable. They were high quality when they were purchased. There was an implied warranty for a certain kind of use that are in place in various systems around. And what comes to mind is the air controller. Some of their computers are pretty old. They haven't upgraded them, so I'm wondering about the 8-year statute of limitations in those kinds of situations where there's a potential for catastrophic loss.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I would ask you to look also at sub 4 in that same section, where if a manufacturer or seller of an item contains a computer product expressly warranted with a useful life longer than, under the amendments we'll now read, 8 years, so the bill is trying to say that if I sold you something that you have the expectation or warranty that it should last a lifetime or 20 years or whatever, I think that's handled in a slightly different way.
Let me follow up on that if I just may jump in. Let's say an elevator. We've heard about elevators, because we're talking here about computer systems, but would an elevator system failure fall under the purview of this statute?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if I can speak expressly to elevators, if an elevator contained an embedded controller chip that had some kind of date sensitivity.
Right.
Now, not all embedded chips have a possibility of computer date failure.
Right, I understand
But it may. Many automatic controllers do have security systems, and some elevators are linked to security systems, et cetera. I think that would I think what you'd have to do under this bill, or even in law, whether this bill passes or not, is get into the issue of useful life and warranties. I don't know anything about elevator warranties, but I assume they're longer than a few years, that they're expressly warranted to last for probably quite some time. So, you know, I think that's the limitations of the 8 years, I think, you know, are made to bring some kind of date certain to consumer products that otherwise may have outlived their useful life or their currency life. They may still be working. But, you know, as you say, Representative Lowe, with your PC, you've swapped out the motherboard, you've done this or that. I mean, hard drives fail, monitors fail, chips break down, motherboards fry. You know, what is the usefulness? And in all those other situations, we would probably defer to the terms of a warranty, 12 months, 24 months, 3 years, whatever. The issue is Y2K, we're trying to get some certainty that that doesn't open up a whole new scheme of certifying products forever, that under normal circumstances, you know, the buyer would have to correct.
I interrupted. Go ahead and finish.
Thank you very much. As I'm looking at line 24, I'm wondering why we wanted to go expressly warranted, because so much of product warranty is not express. It's implied warranty for use of that the product's appropriate as it's used for a particular purpose. And by putting language in there that has the word expressly, that narrows profoundly, don't you think, the scope of any action that might be brought for product failure. What do you think?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I don't have my counselor here next to me today, and I will express a lack of product knowledge on the difference between express and implied. And I will.
Well, my thinking in the 8 years was just to tie this in with what we have now already is the product liability statute of ultimate repose, for instance, for failure of products. I think a warranty claim would be separate from that if a seller or a manufacturer is actually contracted to grant a warranty for a longer period than that. But otherwise, this just happens to have some symmetry, I guess, with that 8-year period of limitation.
Then let me ask one other question, as Mr. Creighton, if that's
good.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks. I agree that symmetry is a beautiful thing, and it just makes sense if we're going to have an 8-year product liability warranty, which I don't agree with. But if we're going to have it, why should we pick on computer folks? I mean, by having one that's longer. So I'm not predisposed to do that by any stretch of the imagination. But I raised the question because I was concerned about those danger dates and how far out those danger dates go, because you might not know that you're going to experience catastrophic breakdown if some of the danger dates are beyond the 8 years. And since you have the technical background, maybe you could comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I've read a lot about Y2K. I guess I'm not familiar with the term of art, danger dates. That was a new one to me today. I know there are more than just one date that we're talking about here, somewhere prior to January 1, 2000. I heard someone mention here something about the year 2032, and I'm not aware of what that date is or how we can probably deal with that 35 years in advance. But
I don't know how you would do that either.
It seems to me the issues here where a cause of action must be brought within 2 years from the date the person discovered or should have discovered using reasonable care, you know, that gives you the ability to say, I don't think too many people are going to have a computer date failure and just sort of sit around for a couple of years before they decide that they have some damages that they need to deal with. So I think that gives some protection there. I don't know if we want to look forward to the year 2032 and try to back up how many years we want to warranty things for. I mean, that's an awful long
time. I'm happy to let the 2029 session deal with that. And with term limits, probably not many of us will be in the legislature then.
And God willing, nor will I be, Representative Shutterly.
Representative Edwards, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What about, it seems I think the focus of the debate that you've been raising is the issue of personal computers. What about mainframes? I mean, there's been lots of changes in that industry as well, but is 8 years, that seems, I don't know what the warranty on those are, but is that a whole other piece of this that's a little different.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I think what the advocates of this kind of narrowly crafted, if you want to call it tort reform or litigation reform, are trying to do is obviously, as this bill does in another section, is drive people towards mitigation. I mean, one of the key concepts in this bill is the concept of the 90-day cure period, that before you even start litigation, you try to work with your vendor to fix the problem rather than, you know, running to court first. And again, I think it's that those kinds of issues are going to go. What we would like to see be the controlling issue is sort of the general underlying contract and warranty types of issues. And you'd have to say on that mainframe, for instance, you know, what was the warranty? How long was the useful life predicated when it was sold? What kind of representations did the vendor make? So it's hard to just deal with that generically. I mean, obviously, systems last. We know computer systems last longer than 8 years, some of them. Probably some of them have, some of us own computers that last longer than 8 years, and certainly the state of Oregon has a number of systems that are more than 8 years old, and that's why we've had to struggle with some of these very costly fixes. But just to say that you know, we're trying to bring some date certain to the debate so that Y2K is just not a cause of action to get a new computer per se. There should be other issues involved rather than just this. And what we want people to do, and I think what most vendors are doing, is trying to go out and work with their customers, even if they're not covered by, expressly covered currently by a warranty, to fix these problems. And that's really what we want to focus people's time and attention and money on, is fixing these problems so we don't have computer date failures.
Sure. Just so I understand sort of the mechanics of this bill a little better, and you heard the debate about how you... your definition here. I actually like how yours written more than that last bill, but with 8 years, and the way this bill's written on page one, line 13, you talk about calendar year 99 or subsequent year, i.e. problems. So Representative Lowe keeps talking about these other dates, danger dates out there. But the way the bill's written with 8 years, this thing is done in 8 years. From the year 2000, is that right? So those danger dates that are beyond 2008, quite frankly, or maybe I know we may have one coming up on us, two of them maybe. Really, this thing stops at the year 2008. Is that correct?
I guess generally, not all the provisions are tied to the eight-year provision. That's not, you know, it doesn't control the entire bill. But I guess it's difficult on this bill and a lot of other issues to try to look forward with absolute certainty in a crystal ball, and I think that's what subsequent legislatures are for. This doesn't preclude fine-tuning of this. If people realize 2 or 4 years from now, oh my God, there's going to be this horrible 2011 problem, that certainly could be addressed at a future date.
Well, let me ask that, if I can. I'm not sure that I see this as having a... this bill is having a life that ends in 2008, where it says that if you look on lines 12 and 13,
right,
the inability of a computer product or a service to properly handle or process dates of calendar year 1999 or subsequent years, you don't see this as rolling forward.
No.
So that if 2011 is a danger date, and the problem is caused by the computer's inability to handle or process dates 2011, it seems to me then this statute would apply to that, as long as the computer or the system was purchased within 8 years before that danger date.
Mr. Chair, I think that's the key point. If it was a, and I don't know, I don't want to get too much on the record of this 2011 since we're making it up as a hypothetical. I think you're exactly right. That wouldn't cover something purchased in 1993, but it would cover something purchased 8 years prior to the date, and the bill would roll forward in the future. So,
well, Mr. Chair, I guess that clarifies, I guess, what I was trying to get at, the mechanics. And I guess that might be a little bit of a problem, because I think we're trying to address, at least I've always thought, we're trying to address the something that's going to happen pretty immediately. I don't know what else is going to happen in the future, whether some program is going to create some other subsequent year problem incompatibility. I think, aren't we just trying to drive it, trying to solve this problem and not crystal ball the future? I guess that's why I asked that question, because it seemed like it potentially was going to go on forever with this 8 years limitation on whatever problem arises as you go.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I believe, you know, the original draft bill had 5 years, and now it's been suggested to move it to 8. I think we are basically looking backwards with that date and not a sort of rolling 8 that goes on forever. I think the bulk of these problems will be, I believe, addressed prior to the year 2000. I mean, most of these problems are being addressed today, and many have already been addressed. This hopefully is a, as you pointed out, not an infinite issue. And I think you'd want to be careful in being too precise in the forward-looking dates. And the 8 years is really a backward-looking number. I don't know if we're going to have 2032 problems and then have to worry about 8 years prior to that. And I don't know that we can solve all that theoretically at this point.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to support what we've got here. I guess I just wanted to make it clear about what it is that we're supporting, because, I mean, I think testimony, everything we've heard in this room has been what's going to happen within the next year, the year 2000. We heard the last definition, year 2000, problem or failure. I mean, to me, I thought that's what pretty much the intent of this was, rather than...
I agree.
Yeah. And I assume if you feel comfortable, Mr. Chair, that that's what the bill was mostly addressing.
Well, I think that is our focus, because Y2K is what everybody's got their eyes on. But I would have to say, and Jim, you may want to follow this in the Senate. We need to get this out of here. Today, you may want to follow this and consider the good and the bad. But as I see this, this covers date-related failures from 99 forward. And, you know, I say there's good and bad, because it does provide a means of redressing those cases. And maybe that's appropriate. These are all a species of computer failure, whether it happens in 2000 or whether it happens in, if we come up with a year 2011 problem or a year 2032 problem, it's still a species of the same problem. Maybe it's appropriate that it be dealt with in the same way. But as I see it anyway, this is not strictly a Y2K bill.
Right. And so in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, that you've heard prior testimony today and in prior dates, you know, there are possible 1999 problems, 2000 problems. And I guess to answer Representative Edwards' earlier question about the incompatibility in language between the two bills, it's something that I'm sure the proponents should have worked out prior to being in this room here today. We prefer the phrase computer date failure to the term of art year 2000 failure, because as you've heard, there may be year 1999 failures. I think the definitions are actually pretty compatible in what they really do. The words are not exactly the same, and the term of art is different in the two bills. And
well, I guess I can suggest how we handle that. We're losing jurisdiction over this bill tomorrow. Senate Bill 268 we'll have for some time. We can either look at amending Senate Bill 268 to pick up some of the terminology so that we merge that terminology into 268, or conversely, on the House side, when it gets over, on the Senate side, when it gets over there, if there are aspects of 268 that should be merged into 3245, we could, before we get done with this, we could blend these two to a very nice product, even if it's not been done as of today.
Well, Mr. Chair, I apologize for not having done that before today, but I will pledge to work with the proponents of the other bill to see that if we can work that out prior to the end of the session, that we have two bills that use kind of common words and terminology, and it's something that we ought to do. And we probably, neither of us today, can just buy off of each other's language, because we all got to talk to lawyers and such. But yeah. I don't think it's a huge problem, and we should try to work on it.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest. If the committee is of the mind to go ahead and move this out, let you all work at Mr. Hartman and Jim, try and work these things out together, and even either we pick it up in Senate Bill 268, or if you think it's better to pick it up in the Senate and amend 3245 when it gets over there. But we still got the time in the session to bring these two together and not create any inadvertent problems by the different approaches that these have taken to the same issue. Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm excited about moving this out today, and I think I like the whole thing, and I'm happy with the 8 years and all of that, because I think it's practical and we do need to go on it. But there is one word change that I would like the committee to consider, if you please, and that is at page 2, line 24, to delete the word expressly. And just because there are many kinds of warranties that are given to a purchaser, some of them are express and some of them are not, depending upon the cleverness of who's doing the talking and who's doing the selling and what actually gets included in the paperwork when you purchase the thing. So to be fair to consumers, but to cover the ball front, thanks. I think that we ought to just delete the word expressly.
I'll speak for myself. My inclination would be not to do that today, but again, follow this through. My concern is that raises some sizable issues when you're talking about the difference between express warranty and implied warranty and how those spring from product literature and representations and just the nature of the product itself under the Uniform Commercial Code. I don't know if I want to do that in this committee today. I think my inclination is to limit it to the Dash 1 amendments that we have engrossed in front of us and to move it out on that base conceptual amendment. But again, I'd be happy to have the conversation continue on that in the Senate side. That's the chair's preference, but I am only one vote.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I would not like to eliminate the word expressly at this point, and I don't know that I could support passage of it with that change.
I concur with your suggestion, Mr. Chair, to get this bill going and do it in the Senate.
Okay. Speaking of
Mr. Chair, I and Representative Lowe, I will certainly do some research on that report back
that would help
prior to the ultimate disposition of this bill and
I
get you a read
that.
On it.
Okay.
Speaking of get this bill going,
are we in work session, Mr. Chair?
Here we are.
Mr. Chair, I ask for adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3245.
Representative Edwards moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3245. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I ask that we adopt House Bill 3245 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3245 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? Please call the roll.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative
Wells?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Representative Whip?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3245 is amended. Goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We have Williams, Edwards, Shetterly. I've had my share.
I'd be happy
Williams
to share
is.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
And I know, I'm sorry.
I'm starting to sound like a drunken sailor with my eyes.
Yeah.
I was just real curious reading the date category.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty interesting.
Did this come from Representative Lowe?
Yes.
The dangerous dates?
No, this came from
this was brought to us by Ms.
Jensen.
Jensen.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really interesting.
Danger dates.
I'm learning all kinds of things being a legislator.
For the record, let's all take a note on the second page that and try and inform our friends and relatives. January 1, 2001 is the first day of the 21st century.
There we go.
Mr. Chairman.
That's been...
Yes, Representative Williams.
And I apologize for having stepped out of the room for a moment, but in our discussion about Senate Bill 268 before you arrived, and maybe you've been, have you talked about it, about the definitional?
Yeah.
We did. We talked about either amending 3245 into 268 over here or vice versa in the Senate to
okay.
try and coordinate the
Good.
Terminology
Good.
So
Thank
we don't
you,
cause any hiccups. Okay, let's go back to Senate Bill. Are we ready on 387?
We are.
Okay.
Amendments.
Work session on Senate Bill 387. I think Representative Werbelow was the one who asked for amendments on that, did you not? Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as the committee will remember, Senate Bill 387 would allow a juvenile court to proceed to the termination of parental rights case, even though the parents have appealed the juvenile court's finding jurisdiction. Before the committee is a Dash 2 amendment, which simply took the informal language which was presented previously to the committee and put it in proper LC form, And I see in the room the Department of Justice is here, as is Mr. Travis is here, and Ms. Ledesma from SCF are here.
Okay.
And they're the ones who brought forth the amendment.
Do you want to come tell us what they're about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Melinda Bruce, Assistant Attorney General, Family Law Division. The Dash 2 amendments are drafted to address an issue of what happens should this bill pass and a court hears a termination case, enters an order terminating parental rights, and the prior order is still on appeal. The concern of some practitioners was that while the termination of parental rights appeal might be fast-tracked or expedited in the Court of Appeals, that the underlying juvenile court order appeal would not be. This amendment, this Dash 2 amendment, assures that the appeals will be consolidated where it makes sense. And by that I mean if, for example, the original appeal already had been briefed and argued, it probably wouldn't make much sense to consolidate it and brief and argue it again. So the language here is crafted to provide that the appeals will be consolidated if appropriate and that they will be advanced on the appellate court docket as termination of parental rights cases are. As we mentioned earlier this week when we discussed the bill in public session, termination of parental rights cases are expedited in the appellate courts. Other juvenile court orders are not.
Okay. So this then is the LC form of the amendment you actually
That's
had with you
correct,
with the testimony
Mr.
on Monday.
Chair.
Okay. All right. Either anybody else? Okay. We're in work session. We have the Dash 2 amendments before us.
Mr. Chair, do we have the Dash 1s here? What are these?
Dash 1.
I've never seen Dash 1s.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, the Dash 1 amendments were withdrawn on the Senate side.
Chairman, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 387.
Thank you. Representative Wong moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 387. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Representative Lowe?
Mr. Chairman, I move 387 as amended to the floor with a detail.
Representative Lowe moves Senate Bill 387 as amended with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wells.
Why did we have the no votes on the floor? What is the opposition to this issue?
Does anybody know, Representative Wells, had a question why there were no votes in the Senate?
There's five no votes.
Votes. No. There were enough.
Chair, Representative Wells, Melinda Bruce again from the Oregon Department of Justice. I do not know what those no votes were. There was some discussion on the Senate Judiciary side. Some people expressed concerns that as an alternative to this bill, they wanted all juvenile court appeals expedited in the appellate courts, and they wanted that as an alternative to this bill. I believe the Judicial Department testified that, you know, that was not practical, primarily for fiscal reasons. I can only guess that may have been the genesis of the no votes.
So as I understand, the expedited process right now is only on what issue? You talked about that the other day. There is one part that brings about the expedited process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, that's correct, and those are those situations addressed in the Dash 2 amendments where the termination of parental rights case has gone forward. That order is appealed. The appeal on the earlier juvenile court orders are still in the appellate courts. What these dash two amendments will do, we'll wrap them up in one package, and they'll go forward on the expedited track like any other termination of parental rights case. And that was the compromise that we had reached on the Senate side with practitioners who were concerned about expediting all juvenile court appeals.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Bedford?
Aye.
Representative Gloss?
Aye.
Representative Rubelow? Representative Walker?
One aye.
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Representative
Witt?
Aye.
Chair
Shetterly? Aye. Senate Bill 3839, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm sorry, 387. I'm looking at my next file. 387, as amended by the committee action, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier, Representative Wells. Thank you very much. And that takes us then to Senate Bill 839. We'll open a work session on that this week.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 839, right. You heard about a month ago, and it specifies procedures for opening a safe deposit box in banks, savings and loans, and credit unions. At the time of the hearing, there were some concerns expressed with regard to whether or not a representative from the institution actually needed to be present at the time that the box contents were actually reviewed, and either at the hearing or after the hearing, some concerns were raised regarding the fact that the bill specifically dealt with wills and will searches, but didn't say anything about trust documents or searches for trust instruments, and so the amendments address that as well. I know Mr. Martinez is here, the bankers, if you...
Sure. Tim, do you
want to hear from him on the A4 amendments?
Seeing these, and thank you for preparing the engrossed.
Sure.
Yeah, those are handy, too.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. Your counsel describes the amendments correctly. I think Representative Wells had some concern that it didn't expressly list in the bill that there would be a member of the institution that would be present, and we cleaned that up as well as the other concerns. We still have the support of the credit unions, the savings and loans, and my association as well as the state planning section of the bar. And I think you had an attorney that day represent himself, Warren Duras, who also has signed up on these amendments. So we'd ask for your support.
So it takes care of having somebody present when the box is opened. It takes care of the trust instrument, mm-hmm. and those are the two things that these amendments deal with.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The third thing that it does do is we also have the certificate of death.
Oh, yes.
Now
other
that.
Evidence.
Right, satisfactory to the institution, mm-hmm. credit
copy
union.
Copy of the obituary or
that's correct,
something
Mr.
like
Chair.
That. The body. Okay.
That would be other evidence, Mr. Chairman.
Is it in the car? Okay, we have the dash A4s in front of us.
Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In addition, we still, the dash A4s do not
that's right.
contemplate the A2s, which are conflict amendments.
Thank you.
So we need to adopt both the A2s and the A4s.
Okay, we have the A2s in front of us.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
I would move that the committee adopt the dash A2
amendments. Representative Williams moves the dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 839. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
I would move the dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 839.
Representative Williams moves the dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 839. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
I'd move Senate Bill 839 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 839 as amended by the committee action today to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Please call the roll.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Excused.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Irvinow? Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wells?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Representative Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair Shively?
Aye. Senate Bill 839, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Anybody care to carry this?
I'll carry it.
You want that one too? Didn't I just give you one?
Yeah.
I'm going to get my quota and then we don't have to worry about it for a while.
All right. Unless there's anybody else there. All right.
Whatever.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. That takes care of Senate Bill 839 and that takes care of our agenda for today. Committee, we will be meeting tomorrow. We've got, tomorrow is the last day, to get, all but just a very couple of our House bills out. So if we don't get them out tomorrow, they die. We will have, Senate, House Bill 2758, that's, we heard that, it's a construction lien bill, it's going to come back to us in a very, very much smaller form. 3245, we'll be back in, we've done that. 2985, that deals with respondeat superior, employer liability for employees, torts. 3605, that's the employer liability law bill that we heard last Thursday evening. 3304, that's the impoundment of a vehicle in a, for DUII or criminal driving while suspended. And back in front of us tomorrow for action or not. Okay? We're adjourned.